Welcome back, folks. This is NH3 Tech Talk. I'm your host, Justin Little, and we're back. You know, you guys should be telling me welcome back, because I haven't made one of these for like 2 weeks. I turned 1 week into 2 weeks, and I apologize for that, but it's just the way it went down, dude. I've been so busy, you know. I'll get into all that. But first, we are going to talk about screw compressor annual inspections today. Okay. Now I'm going to go through how I do them, you know, which is pretty standardized. I'm sure it's not going to be too different than anyone else does them, on a screw compressor package. The thing is this isn't like going to be like an SOP or nothing like that. This is going to be more so like a workflow. You know, I'm going to tell you how I do it from start to finish, kind of just like my workflow of it all, you know, my process, what I do. I'm not going to get super detailed and tell you exactly how to test these safeties and stuff, but I'm going to go over which ones need to be tested, of course. So just to let you know what this episode is about, that's why I wanted to tell you first thing. Bear with me here. I'm trying to get back in the flow, man. It's been 2 weeks. I got to figure out how to do these podcasts again, dude. I blew it, dude. I should have been more consistent, but what's been happening is, you know, life. I spent 2 days troubleshooting my boat and failed. Oh, I felt the most amount of failure that I felt in probably a couple of years. You know, I felt like I troubleshot every possibility, whatever. I did a tune up on it, you know, standard, owner stuff. And, I got some kind of short somewhere, or maybe it's my computer for the motor, whatever. I don't know. I don't know how to diagnose it at this point. So I had to give it to a guy, dude, and, handed my boat over to him along with my pride. And said, help me, brother. Help me. Just like people in refrigeration do for us service techs. They call us when they can't figure stuff out. You know, so this is super relatable. Oh, gosh. So anyways, there's been that. I've been kind of networking a lot, you know, talking with a lot of different companies and people and stuff. And I actually been fielding a lot of job offers and opportunities, you know, that have opened up for me since I've started doing this podcast. And that's kind of what I'm in the process of doing right now. So I didn't really want to kick out a podcast and, you know, talk about something that may not even happen or something developing, because that's just dumb, you know. Who wants to hear about who woulda, coulda, shoulda, or what might happen? I'll let you guys know when stuff happens. But as for now, I'm actually in between companies, and I'm fielding offers, and we're getting close, you know? We'll see within the next week or so. I'll probably release the info on the next podcast or whatever, but yeah, no big secret or nothing. I just don't want to release any info until we get it all locked in, I guess. So there's that. If you guys have any more questions about that, about where I'm going or whatever, and you talk to me already on a personal basis, which a lot of you guys do, feel free, if you're curious, just shoot me a message and be like, hey, where are you going? I might tell you, or I just might wait until I tell everybody. Who cares, right? Doesn't matter where I work. I'm a stud service technician. No matter where I go, anywhere in the world, that's what you get with this trade. Remember, once you learn, it doesn't matter what company you work for or what country you live in or whatever. You're a stud. You're a refrigeration technician. Go anywhere. Okay. Okay. What else did I want to talk about, dude? I don't know why I'm trying to justify so much why I haven't done a podcast in 2 weeks, but I feel like I owe an explanation, I guess. So there's those things. I went to a couple golf tournaments that I'm going to go talk about, and I've just been schmoozing, dude, lately. You know, I have also been dealing with, oh, this is rough, dude. My wife doesn't listen to this, so I could talk about it. I met her about 3 months after she got this dog, right? And the dog's name is Cooper. It's not just this dog. It's my dog, too. I've been with my wife for 14 years, and this dog is now 14 years and like 3 months, whatever. I don't know. And yeah, dude, Cooper, that's his name. He's been my road dog, dude, for the, oh my gosh, so much life, dude. Oh my gosh. The guy's been through me, through it all with me, through everything. And my wife, you know, just a sidekick, best dog ever, dude. Everyone's got the best dog ever, but so did I, you know. I used to call him the Wizard because he looks like Gandalf. He's a West Highland Terrier, white one. And yeah, the Wizard, bro. Yeah, man. He's running out of tricks. He is on his last days. We're kind of doing hospice care for him right now. My wife is. My wife's a nurse. An RN out here in California. So she's taking good care of him. But yeah, I'm dealing with that, dude. That's heavy on the heart right now, you know? And you know, we're just trying to make him comfortable in his last days, dude. Just so you guys know, and don't beat me up too bad about not kicking out a podcast. That's kind of what's going on to you. And it sucks, bro. Dude, I'm losing a son, you know? Those of you that have dogs and have had dogs for a long time, you know, they're your family, you know? I guess I'm telling you guys this because I am human. And I guess it's good for you guys to know that I go through things too, man. Anyways, this will play out, but oh man, this episode is definitely dedicated to my boy Cooper, dude. My dog, the Wizard. Man, love you. It's gonna be sad to see him go, dude. I've had him longer than I've had my twins. Okay, so back to the podcast. Sorry about that, guys. So that's what's been going on with my life, dude. Just trying to get my life in order while I'm in transition between companies and stuff. I had a laundry list of things that I wanted to get done, and I just got them done like yesterday, dude. It took me like 2.5 weeks to do it. So now I had the first free day I had was actually today, dude. And look at me being true to the crew. I got my butt in here and I'm doing it, dude. I told my wife today, I don't even care what you want to do, you know, take care of the dog. I got to do a podcast, you know, I'll be back. So she respects that, dude. Of course, because I'm the biz-oss, boy. Just kidding, dude. My wife will whoop my ass. Okay, here we go. So first I want to, you know, talk about some, you know, shout outs and people out here doing the Lord's work. You know what I mean? Out here in the industry. I got a lot to talk about this time, dude. I took notes. You're welcome. There was just too much info this time. Too much time has passed and too many emails and messages and interactions. So I had really had to sit down and kind of jot stuff down and just highlight the main people that kind of, you know, stuck out this time around, you know? Every time it's someone different. I mean, a lot of times some of the same people will comment, and that's cool. But every week it's like, man, someone shines, you know, when they're interacting with me, dude. I really enjoy it. And, you know, on that note, dude, let me talk about this because I don't know when I'll have another time to talk about this. Okay, folks. Gentlemen, younger technicians, okay? You guys that have been reaching out to me on my email and on Messenger and everything, messaging me with troubleshooting questions. Okay, we need to do better at this, guys. Okay. For one, okay, you need to come at me correct. Okay. You come at me just like I was working with you. Okay. I'm sorry if I'm going to sound stern right now. Okay. But you coming to me for help on email about a problem you're having, it's just like you coming to like a senior technician or a foreman or, you know, tech support or anybody. Okay. You're seeking assistance. Okay. I've made this clear in previous podcasts. Okay. I'm not as upset as I sound. I'm just very stern. Okay. Let's make that clear. Let me throw a laugh in there for you. Yeah. I mean, you have to provide all the information. Okay. You have to let me know suction pressure, discharge pressure, oil temperature, which oil differential, What type of oil cooling? What type of compressor is it? What type of separator is it? Vertical, horizontal? I mean, all the info that you could possibly get. You know, you need to present to someone that's going to help you. Okay. Now, if you don't have all this info before you reach out and talk to someone, that means you haven't checked everything before you reach out to someone. Okay. That's part of it too. You got to check everything before you reach out to someone. Okay. You don't overlook nothing, but you must have the info. Okay. If you're coming at me being like, hey, my compressor's running funny. Do you think you could help me? I'll be like, yeah, I can help you, dude. What's the problem? Yeah, it's running funny. Oh, okay. Well, check this. Oh, my God. Anyways, I get it, dude. You guys are new. And thank you for reaching out to me, especially. You know, that makes me feel good that you're willing to, you know, come to me for help. And I will supply help. And not as a stern manner as I'm speaking right now, but I'm gonna give you info and then be like, hey bud, let's do this right. You know what I mean? Get your info, do this, do that. And then a lot of times they'll be like, oh dude, I'll check this, check that, or I'll tell them, hey, check this, check that, when they tell me about a problem. And guess what they do? They don't let me know. Oh my gosh, I can only assume that I'm telling them the answer to their problem. And they fix it, and then they're over there trying to act like they fix it themselves without reaching out to me. That's what the only thing I could assume. Because if it was wrong, why wouldn't you email me back and be like, nah, dude, that didn't work, you know? Or if it was right, why wouldn't you email me back and be like, dude, that worked? It's disrespectful. So, yeah, if you're going to start anything with anyone, not just me, but as far as just like asking for help and getting someone else involved in your task or your job, you know, because you can't figure it out on your own, you owe it to this person to do the follow-up call and let them know what you found, whether it was because of their help or is because of something random or it was just something, whatever. It doesn't matter, dude. You involve them already. Give them the respect and let them know. There's nothing that drives me more wild than that. You know what I mean? Because then we're over here thinking these apprentices are just like looking for help and then trying to act like they did it on their own. You know, that's fake valor right there. We don't like that. Okay. Give credit to where credit's due. Sorry for going off on that, but you guys come correct. Okay. If you want help, help yourself first, dude. You know, get your model number, get your serial number, get the brand, the whatever, like if it's an oil pump issue, you know, what kind of pump is it? If it's a liquid injection issue, dude, get all the info. Dude, what type of valve is it? This, that, and this. That way I could be like, oh yeah, dude, this, that, and this. Okay. So, it's not too hard, dude. This is basic stuff, guys. And I got a couple of you guys kind of failing me in that area when you're coming to me looking for help. Okay, so step up your game, players. You know what I mean? You guys that do come to me with help with all the info, that's right, dude. You guys are studs. You know what I mean? And I think I've helped quite a few people. I've got like probably like 4 or 5 guys that came back and were like, oh, dude, I didn't even think about that. It worked. I was like, yeah, boy. So, yeah, I am not mobile tech support. So, you guys don't get all crazy, dude. This is, you know, I help out these brand new guys that are, you know, trying to understand things and pretty basic problems and stuff. But if you've seen your guys are having problems and issues, you know, reach out, dude. I know quite a bit. Oh, God. Okay. So, I'm going to do some shout outs and stuff now. Okay, and I am going to start with a gentleman by the name of Jackson B. reached out to me, and they are having a RITA safety day in Iowa, okay? A RITA safety day in Iowa, in Des Moines, Iowa, June 7th and 8th, okay? And this is going to be at 2501 Bell Avenue, okay? And that's in Des Moines, Iowa. Okay, contact Jackson B. for more info, but there's going to be awesome classes. There's going to be a ton of vendors. There's going to be PSM programs. It's a full day, a full scheduled day of a bunch of presentations. It's like a mini national convention. You know, I looked at the itinerary, dude. I mean, they're doing it big over there in Iowa. I've never been to Iowa. Fly me out there, brothers. Let me visit. Anyways, dude, if you're in the industry, get your butt to the RITA Safety Day in Des Moines, Iowa, June 7th and 8th, okay? Go to RITA.com and they'll have information on there. There's a website for it, but I forgot to write down the web address. That's all the information you need. I'm sure you could search for it. If you're within a 200-mile radius of Des Moines, Iowa, drive there, okay? June 7th and 8th, okay? Jackson reached out to me and was like, hey, dude, I'd really appreciate if you could shout this out and then kind of get this going. We really love people to come from all over the country to participate and really just help out our location as far as like refrigeration in Iowa, you know? Iowa. Who's been? Huh? If someone messaged me, tell me about Iowa, dude. I'm so curious and ignorant, just like Australia. Never been. Never done research. I don't hear nothing about Iowa on the news. I know they got good wrestlers. The Hawkeyes. You. Okay, so there's that. I'm going to shout out a gentleman, Peter I. in Nova Scotia. Okay. He's out there driving around, dude, complaining to me about how I haven't kicked out a podcast to him. And he's like, dude, he's like, I'm driving around. But he's super nice, dude, because Nova Scotia's in Canada, right? And Canadians, you know, here in the United States, or maybe just California, we have an impression of Canadians as like them being like the nicest people. They're like super nice. And this guy lived up to that, dude. He reached out to me. He was like, hey, man, I'm just, you know, checking up on you, man. Are you doing all right, dude? How are you? You know? How you doing, man? I haven't seen a podcast. I go, dude, thanks. Thanks for asking. I'm fine, dude. Thank you. That was very thoughtful of him to reach out. And I do appreciate that, dude. I'm kind of laughing about it, but, you know, here you are, Peter I in Nova Scotia. You got on the podcast, brother. I appreciate you, brother. You've been supportive from day one. Okay, moving on. I went to a golf tournament recently. I got invited, and it was in right here in the Central Valley of California. It was a Central Valley Chemical Safety Day tournament, and that was cool. And I just wanted to call out some people that put that together. Amy R. with Chemco. I think I botched up the whole Facebook post I tried to do for the tournament. Amy from Chemco, she's head of sales. If you want to need chemicals or anything, call Chemco and talk to Amy. Anyways, the golf tournament was wonderful. There was probably over 100 people there, and we just had a great time. Everyone from the industry, and it was great, you know, to talk about things and see old faces, and you know, we got a good community here. Of refrigeration professionals in the California Central Valley. So when we have golf tournaments or our dinners or meetings or anything that's, you know, industry related as a whole, we show up, dude. And it's amazing, dude. I'm proud of that aspect of our industry right here in the Central Valley. The companies show up, we show up deep, dude, and we all talk, dude. Everyone's representing. We're all talking to customers, dude. A lot of times, we all have the same customers, dude. And sometimes they'll bounce around company to company to company, dude. And it just happens. You guys have common things and common accounts. You know, you could talk about and stuff. And it's just like, hey, how's that account doing, dude? Used to be mine, now it's yours, dude. How you guys doing with it? And they'll be like, oh, and you'll be like, hey, is that one guy there, dude? With the I don't know. I went to one plant where. There was a gentleman with a glass eye, and in that glass eye, it was a happy face. And the guy was the coolest dude, but I just had a hard time not staring at it sometimes. But, gosh, he was so cool. But, why am I talking about that? Oh my God. Yeah, it was just something we referred to. So you get those common connections with like places and operators and stuff. So, anyways, that one was a good tournament. I didn't do so well. This is my first time golfing in like a year, but I had a great time. You know, I got invited out there by a company named Stellar, and they're pretty big in the industry if you've heard of them. And they invited me out to go golfing, and it was cool. I had a great time, you know, and I appreciate that. So there was that. And then there was last Friday on Cinco de Mayo was the Rita Golf Tournament. Okay, right here in Central Valley, California. It was for the San Joaquin Valley Rita chapter. And we showed up deep, folks, to this nice golf course. This place was so nice, dude. And here we are, a bunch of blue-collar guys showing up to break shop, dude. We were like 140 guys deep, dude. And it was cool, dude. It was so well put together and coordinated well with raffle prizes and ice chests on every hole filled with drinks of whatever you like, dude. And cart girls driving around and just hospitality to the max. It was so well put together. And, you know, all the companies from the Central Valley were there, dude. We all came together and, you know, we're just doing the Lord's work, dude. We're over here talking about refrigeration, you know, making connections, you know, talking jobs, you know, trying to schmooze clients, you know, just doing what you do at these golf tournaments, dude. And it was just the best time. You know, it was so good to see so many familiar faces out there. There's some people I want to shout out before I get into this, dude. As far as that golf tournament goes, Dustin McDonald from RMS Refrigeration, Refrigerated Mechanical Services in Lodi, is the one who pretty much put it together and coordinated everything, you know. And I just want to give him a shout out, dude. He does a great job, and he's been a pillar in the industry right here in the Central Valley in California for many, many years. Okay, a very well-respected gentleman right there. I respect him. That's a fact. So good job there, sir. If you guys are looking for a company in the Central Valley and are around the Sacramento, Lodi area and are looking for something, you know, kind of more local, like a shop, give RMS a call, Refrigerated Mechanical Services, and talk to Dustin McDonald. His number is their number is 209-366-6880. And, you know, I was just so impressed with the way the tournament went and how much fun everybody had that, you know, I gave Dustin a call and asked him if I could do that for him and his company. And he was like, yeah, sure, bro. Just keep it positive. I won't talk about your golf game, brother. Anyway, so there's that, dude. You know, if you guys are looking, dude, give that company a shot or at least give them a call and see what they have to offer for you, dude. It might be a good match. Okay. Some of the companies that were out there, dude, we all come together, dude. And, you know, I worked for a couple of them, and a lot of people listening to this have as well, because there's a lot of us here in the Central Valley. But I just want to give a shout out, you know, to all the companies around our area that showed up and, you know, gave support to our industry and are really out there trying to bring more awareness and you know, good things, positive vibes, and just develop our industry, man. Keep it on the forefront. Keep it cutting edge. I'll tell you what, the people involved in this industry are amazing. We have the people to make this industry as amazing as we want it to be, okay? But we all need to come together and make that happen. And that's what these situations do, like the tournaments and dinners and meetings and stuff like that. So if your company's not participating, please start. Let's grow. Let's all grow together. Okay. This is the motto, homies. You know what I mean? This is the slogan. You know, we're trying to build a better industry. Okay. That's what this podcast is about. I'll tell you that. Okay. So some of the companies that I want to give a shout out right here in the Central Valley, California, okay, that we're representing there at the Rita Tournament. And for those of you that still don't know, that's Refrigeration Engineers Technicians Association, okay? It's a national, or I guess worldwide organization. but this is our chapter right here, just in the Central Valley, the San Joaquin Valley of California. And we're thick here, guys. We represent, okay? And some of these companies, dude, I'm just going to go ahead and give a shout out. I didn't call these people and ask them if I could shout them out, but I'm just going to anyways. sorry. First off, the San Joaquin Valley, read a chapter. You guys are amazing. Ruben, the president, Kevin K and his son, Tyler, you guys do an amazing job. Okay, Hills Brothers was out there. Frick, you guys sponsored a whole Frick Compressors or Johnson Controls, whatever. APCO was out there. APCO sponsored a whole, had so many raffle prizes, and they showed up deep too to represent their company. Good for them. You know, that was APCO right there in Modesto. Stellar was there sponsoring holes, prizes, you know, showing up, you know, representing their company. Good for them. RMS, who I talked about with Dustin McDonald. And, you know, those are the main ones, the big service companies, you know, around this area. Anyone else, if you want to get mentioned, dude, hit me up. I'll mention you if you're in the Central Valley, California. This is our turf, dude, and I'm down to help out all these companies in our home area. You know, there's so much work. There's a ton of work to go around, and I'm only trying to lift up all these companies, and whether I work for them or not, you know. Of course, I'll be pushing my own company once I kind of reveal what that is, you know. But, you know, just realize that we're all awesome here. You know, we all have awesome techs at all of them. And what we need is more awesome younger techs, which is what this is about. You know what I mean? So just letting you guys know, if you're not involved in any part of our industry other than just work, get involved, dude. There's many things you could do. If you're in a union, go to your union meetings. If you're in RITA, go to your RITA meetings. If whatever organization is in your area, then they have meetings, get involved. You know, let's grow our community. Let's make it better. Let's share trade secrets, not trade secrets, but ways we do things and all that stuff. Kind of like how I'm going to do today on this podcast and talk about screw compressor annual inspections and stuff like that. You know? So I guess that's just a reminder about what this podcast is just about. You know, that's what we're doing. So without any further ado, we're going to talk about screw compressor annual inspections today. The reason why I decided to do this, I think I was getting bored of the whole apprentice thing and PM inspection. You know, I was going to do another episode about piping and insulation, and I think I'm just going to do that with some compliance guy or something, or woman. I'll just figure that out later. So a screw compressor annual inspection, okay, is a good measure, okay, of an apprentice, okay? Can they do one on their own, okay? How long have they been an apprentice? Some people think that by the end of 1 year, an apprentice should be able to show up and do a compressor annual inspection. Okay, I'm talking full inspection here, like pump down, change filter, everything. I'm going to get into that. Excuse me. Yeah, it's an 8-hour job, okay, and there's a lot to do, and I'm going to go over everything that needs to be done, okay? And like I said, this is not an SOP, standard operating procedure. This is a workflow, okay? This is how I do it in order to get it done in 8 hours, okay? So if you follow this guideline, it'll give you a good workflow and, you know, you can hone that to be able to fit in your 8 hours if you're not able to do a complete compressor annual in 8 hours, which I mentioned before is pretty much the standard, okay? 8 hours, all day, okay? If you do it right, it takes you all day, okay? Guys like me, I do it right, it doesn't take me all day. I got about 1.5 hours to spare sometimes just because I'm so efficient. I'm just a stud, dude. You know what I mean? I'm thorough and efficient. Be like me. Okay. So I'm just going to go ahead and just talk about it. You know, this is how it gets done in 8 hours, dude. And from my experience, everyone does things different. There's more than one way to skin a cat. Whenever you hear from me is me doing it. Okay, it's not the standard. It's not like, this is how it's done. No. Okay, you want the standard? Read the book, you know? I'm just giving you a workflow, okay? Let's make that clear, folks, okay? I don't want to catch no heat and be like, oh, dude, no, it's not the right way. It's like, I do it right. Okay. I'm thorough. I do it right. And if it's different from the way you guys do it, then good for you. Okay. I'm sure we all get the same things done and we come up with the same prognosis, no matter which thing you do first or whatever. It's not a race. Okay. Youngsters, it's not a race to get this done. Okay. It's quality work. Okay. That's why they give you 8 hours to do this, dude. Anyone can blow through anything and slop it all up. You know, we're doing quality work because people's lives are in danger here. Right. So the time factor is important to talk about. You're going to feel the heat. Okay. Especially if you take a lunch. Okay. I don't really take a lunch when I'm doing heavy stuff because I know the time frames, you know, I'll bring food with me, eat on the fly. I've talked about this in other podcasts. I'm not going to go at it again, but you'll realize in your journey how important it is to have food with you, because all it takes is a strip bolt or a strip fitting, compression fitting or something. And now you're in danger of going into overtime, you know, whether you want to report it or not. You know, you might be newer and you might not report your hours. You might kick it down for free as your free education, which is always a good idea. Be like, you know what? I donated an hour, dude, just because I'm the one who stripped the bolt, this, that, and this. I'm not going to tax my company. Okay. There's techs out there that were like, it doesn't matter if they mess it up or not. They're charging every single minute, whatever. And I don't know what's right, what's wrong. I'm not the moral police. I know how I do it. And I'm not going to explain that because you guys do your own thing, you know? Okay. No one's right or wrong. You do you, foo. Okay. Enough of the jib. Okay. So, yeah, if you're a good apprentice and you could show up to a facility and do all the things I'm going to explain by yourself and do it successfully and safely and professionally, then yes, you are on par, and on your way to being a good service technician or a good apprentice, okay? We're going to call you a one-year guy exactly, okay? By 1 year in this trade, I like to think that it would it'd take you about 8 months, okay? But 1 year is very fair, okay? To be able to have done it enough, be trained enough, and seen enough to where you could basically do it by yourself, or you're so very close. Like, maybe you're only worried about one or two things right now, but you shouldn't be lost. If you're lost right now on a compressor annual, look at your trainers, look at yourself, okay? You most likely have not done the work, okay? You should be able to whip through an annual after a year, okay? There's forms. I'm sure most companies have forms and stuff. If it's not, I'm sure it's like an IIAR form or something. You know, it's all right there what needs to be checked, okay? So learn to do it because your job depends on it, dude. If you can't complete a compressor annual efficiently in 8 hours, oh man, step up your game or move on, dude. You know, go do something to where you don't got to do annuals because it's a big part of our workload. We're inspecting compressors, oh man, a ton. Okay. Here we go. Bear with me, guys. I'm still trying to teach this online type of, I don't know what to call it, online tutorials, whatever. I don't know. It's trying to teach without showing and just verbalizing stuff. I took notes, but like I said, bear with me. I'm trying to get better at this. And I don't know. You guys tell me if I am or not. I don't know. I think I suck. But whatever. I do my best. Okay. So first things first, you're going to show up to the facility, right? You're going to do your line break. Right? You're going to do your job site safety rules and all that good stuff if you haven't been there. Okay? If you've been there within the year, most likely you're good and you're current and all that good stuff. Okay. So you're going to fill out your proper paperwork that's going to make you legit for the day, dude. Okay? Now that is going to entail a line break permit because you will be breaking a line and pumping down this compressor today. Okay? And we're going to go through that. Okay. You're going to want to fill out a job hazard analysis if your company has one that requires you to do that. Most facilities do, and it goes along with your line break permit. You typically fill out the job hazard analysis, which identifies the risks involved in the job at hand. So you'd fill out all the risks involved with doing a compressor annual. And then you would fill out your line break permit and go through the checklist and make sure you have a P&ID and an SOP on hand and everything that you need in order to get the job done. Okay. Each instance is different. You know what I mean? So this is site specific. So you guys do your best. Okay. there's always a form that you forget, it seems like. Anyways. Next, you want to put the sensors in test mode, okay? Or disable the one in the engine room or wherever you're working. Just so the one in the immediate area. Some people put bags over the one right there if they don't know how to disable them, or if it some weird reason they can't or whatever. I don't know. Make sure that you're not going to set off the sensors, you know, and you're going to shut down the whole engine room because they might be running production and all that. And here you are shutting them down because you got this annual inspection. That's just on the schedule, not because the compressor's anything wrong, but you're there for the inspection and you shut down all production. They're looking at you like, dude, we didn't even care that you did this today. And you shut us down. Be prepared to find out about a lot of mad people. Okay. So what you want to do is put the sensors in test, okay, whether it be all of them or just right there in the engine room or whatever, or just ensure that you're not going to kick it off, okay? Ensure that it's going to be okay with production to begin, okay? Is this a critical compressor to where you're going to shut it down and then they're not going to make temps, okay? Find out all that out, okay? Usually we'll schedule like an annual inspection. They know we're coming and it's usually on a down day or a light production day to where we are able to have the compressor, and a lot of times we'll show up and it'll be off. That's how we're going to assume we're finding our compressor today is off while everything else is running, because the operators did an amazing job of turning it off and, you know, having it ready for us. Some places pump it down for you. It's company policy. Like, you'll show up and the compressor's like isolated and pumped down, locked out and everything. It's so nice, dude. You just show up and do work, you know? And then, but a lot of times it's a pain in the butt too, because you got to rely on them to take everything off and be there to put it back online. And you're on a time frame, you know, and finding people takes a long time sometimes if you're at a big facility and they got jobs to do too. They're not there to help you. You're there to help them. Keep that in mind, okay? You're a guest. Okay. So, sorry, I had to stop and start again. So what you're going to do, you're going to walk up to this package, right? And you're going to do a walk around, make sure it's all good to start, you know, make sure there's no failures, no nothing. What you're going to do is put in manual run, manual slide valve, so you don't mess up the load right away, right? And you're going to start this compressor that you're here to do the annual inspection on. Okay. I'm not going to go step by step and talk to the operator, this, that, and this. You guys know what the get down is already, right? You're a 1 year guy. Okay. Proud of you. Okay. okay. So what you're going to do, you're going to walk up and you're going to start this compressor. Okay. You're here to inspect this compressor. First things first, does it run? So you push start, dude, okay? And you're going to let this thing start. You're going to notice it, see what it does on startup. If it just, is it BFD? Is it soft start or what? But it's going to be like, or you'll hear the soft start, you know? Those are the two differences for you inexperienced guys. A VFD is just going to be like, and a soft start is going to be like, that's Y delta, soft start, whatever. Okay, so you're going to start it, you're going to listen, and, you know, you're letting it warm up. You know, if this compressor's been off for a long time, there's a good chance there might be liquid condensed in the separator just a little bit, and pumping it out is going to take forever because you got a little bit of liquid in there that's kind of cold, and you got to boil that off. Just takes forever, okay, especially depending on how you're pumping it down. I know there's a lot of guys out there that pump a whole separator down in a 5 gallon bucket, dude. And that just takes forever, dude. Oh my gosh. You know, with like a 3/8 hose, Yeah, that'll take you an hour or two, man. Sometimes, depending. there's different ways to pump down a compressor package, okay? If you have access to a siphon tee, let it rip, you know, at a reasonable flow so you're not sticking no one out. You got to be careful pumping it down into the drain because you might create fume that comes up in other drains and production facilities. I've seen it all happen. You go hot down the siphon tee, you know, a little too hot, you know? And the odor from the ammonia, it's not diluted enough, so it starts. The odor starts creeping out from other vents in the drainage system, and you start getting hits of ammonia in the plant. Oh, gosh, sometimes a long ways away, and you're like, what is going on? Then you put it together that you're the dummy. Okay, so everything's slow. I'd say let it rip, but I don't really mean let it rip. You know, you want to crack a valve and just bleed out whatever ammonia is left after you eat. I'll get to that. Okay. I don't want to jump ahead. Okay. Excuse me. So while you're running this compressor and warming it up, right? You're going to start filling out your paperwork. Okay. You're going to go around, you're going to take down the model, the serial number. You know, you're going to get the motor information and stuff like that. This is all information that's going to help for next year when you show up, you know, or if like 2 months from now, you guys have a problem with this compressor and the customer calls you and says, hey, I need an oil filter for this, blah, blah, blah. I fouled it, whatever. And you're going to be like, oh, that's compressor two on the high side. Boom. I pull up a report or our company will, our parts order person. Boom. There's the model number. There's the serial number. It's all on file. Okay, so that's why you do that. I mean, you get everything. We're talking like every information that you can from the data plates, sales order numbers, model number, serial number. If on the motor, you got to do frame, amps, horsepower, voltage, the phase, service factor, everything, dude. More info, the better. I spoke about this, okay? At the beginning of this podcast, okay? Always more info than less. If there's a piece of info that you think you could include it, okay? That's it, okay? So while you're running this compressor and warming it up, right, you're going to walk around it. You're going to make sure you ain't got no nothing obvious. You know, you're using your senses again, and you're like, okay, everything sounds good. Everything looks good. Nothing, no alarms, no cutouts. Okay, cool, dude. We at face value, this compressor is legit. So, you're going to have your own inspection paperwork, right, that you're filling out. Right. And you're filling out all that. It takes a little bit, dude, 20 minutes, you know, maybe, I don't know, to get all the info, the serial numbers and all that stuff. And then you're getting operating pressures. You're going to be filling out, you know, what's your motor current? What's your pressure drop? Okay. Your oil filter pressure drop. Okay. What's your oil level? Okay. What do you have oil in your secondary sight glass? Okay. You're going to listen for abnormalities. You're just looking for anything, okay? Document all your running temps and pressures right now before you change anything or do your annual inspection. That way, no one could come back on you and be like, hey, it was running fine before you touched it. You'll have your documentation and be like, no, it wasn't running fine before I touched it, you know? Or here's the readings before I touched it, and here's the readings after. So it's just kind of CYA at that point, you know, but it's also for documentation to how good the compressor's running, you know, not everything's covered CYA, you know, it all has practicality. Okay. So you're going to check the secondary sight glass, make sure your coalescers are good and stuff. And there's a way to test that too. Okay. So then, after that, you filled out your paperwork, you got your running pressures, you got your motor amps, you're operating and all this stuff. You're confident that you're ready to proceed. So what you're going to do next, or what I like to do next, is if it's liquid injection, I'm going to close the liquid injection isolation valve, right? And what that's going to do is prevent any more liquid from cooling the oil and the discharge temp to this package, right? And while I'm doing that, I'm going to walk around to the compressor panel, and I'm always ready to turn it off. Anytime I'm testing a safety or anything, I got my finger right there on the stop button. You know, emergency stop, whatever, normal stop, whatever. Sometimes I will lower the set point just because I don't want to take it up that high, like on a high discharge pressure cutout. Like if it's 210 pounds for a high discharge pressure cutout, and my reliefs are 250, I don't like going up that high because I think they relieve at 90% or 95%. So, you know, maybe I'll drop the set point to like 185 pounds discharge pressure, you know what I mean? Before I test it, you know, that way I'm just not taking it up to the limit. And you never want to lift a relief valve when you don't have to. Maybe they're 4 years old and they have to be replaced every 5 years. And maybe the spring's weak, dude, and you bringing it up to 210 pounds is going to lift it. You just don't want that on a normal inspection day. Okay. So think about that kind of stuff. And I'll teach you guys how to test that shutdown in a minute. Okay. So you're going to close that liquid injection isolation valve and let that compressor run. And what's going to happen is that your oil temp and your discharge temp are going to rise depending on the compressor or whatever. I don't know what's going to fail first. Most likely like an oil temp or something. So you'll fail on oil temp or high discharge temp, most likely, right? Boom. You're shut down. Boom. That's your first safety that you tested. Most likely it's like a high discharge temp if you do it that way. If you have a thermosiphon compressor, whatever, dude, just warm up your probe. I don't know. Okay. So, yeah, that was your first shutdown. Okay. You don't want to waste any shutdowns. Okay. I'm going to explain this. You do not clear the recycle delay. Okay. After every shutdown or most shutdowns. Okay. There's a 20-minute recycle delay for the motor to cool down. Okay. Starting a motor will cause it to fail prematurely. You may not see the effects immediately, but over time you shorten the lifespan of that motor. Okay. Let's just leave it at that. Anyone could say anything about clearing recycle delays all they want. I don't care. Okay. Show me proof that over time it doesn't degrade the motor. I have a hard time believing that you could do that. So don't clear it. You know, you might be able to clear it with like a couple minutes left. I'm okay with that. You know, 3-4 minutes left, whatever. But only once or twice, you know, let it go the full service cycle delay. You got other stuff you could do while you're waiting. Okay. So you test the safety, wait for cycle delay, go around, you know, wipe something up, you know, stay busy. You know, there's stuff to do. If you have a good list that you need to fill out, look for something on that list you could do. Okay. But, okay. So once that compressor fails on your first shutdown, you're going to document that. Okay, what pressure did it shut down at? You know, what's the normal operating range and all this good stuff? You know, just document everything. I'm not going to go step by step, but document everything. Your pressures, your set points. If you change the set point, write it to what you change it to and write it what it was. That way you have reference to go back if you forget to change it, okay? Don't ever forget to change set points back if you're manipulating a panel. Okay, to test safeties. That's the number one callback, I would say, for technicians for completing annual inspections. They change set points to manipulate the panel to kick off a safety, right? But they don't change it back, right? So when they leave, the facility starts up the compressor, boom, it's shutting down or something, and they're thinking, oh, this guy broke our compressor. And then it's a service call on warranty. You're out there for free just to go change that parameter, guy. Not cool. So ensure, we create whatever system you need to double check your set points and stand your set points. Okay. And don't forget to change them back, dude. This is a big deal. It's annoying, dude. If I come after an apprentice that doesn't do this, I'm irritated, dude, because that's, oh man, the company takes a hit for that because they got to send Big Poppy out there at a lot more money than you to go figure it out real quick because, you know, sometimes they might send you back if you're lucky and you can. You can try to cover your tracks. You can only hope that. But most of the time when it happens to an apprentice, they'll send a more senior technician out there just because we know it's going to be a teachable moment. And that ends up usually what happens. Okay. So once it fails, you're going to lock out the compressor. You're going to isolate all the isolation valve, the suction isolation valve, the discharge isolation valve, if it's got an economizer, you're going to isolate that. Any and all, follow your SOP. Okay. What I usually do is, I'll shut every valve. I'll lock out the main power to the motor, but I'll leave the control power on to the panel, the compressor panel. I don't know how much rules on violating doing that, but I like to see my pressures. A lot of times there's no gauges on these packages and the panel is all you got, you know? So I like to leave the panel on, you know, even though that the main power to the motor's locked out, you know, just so I can see my pressures and stuff as I'm pumping it down. It's just very helpful, you know, but you got to make sure it's in manual off and it's not going to start, you know? And I've told you guys that when you lock something out, you need to go first things first. You lock that compressor out, you go to that panel and you push start. Okay. And watch it fail. You know, it shouldn't even ramp or nothing. It should just be like quiet. You know, you'll hear your oil pump, you know, and then boom, nothing, auxiliary failure, you know, for your compressor. Okay. Always verify that it will not start after a lockout. Okay. Do it two times if you want to. Okay. I've done that. Yeah, I don't know why. I can't think of why I did that. But yeah, I've been worried about stuff before where I double check, you know, get in the habit of doing that if you feel the slightest worry, because you will regret it in hindsight. Okay, so now we're locked out. We close all the valves. You know, what we're going to do before we close the suction valve actually is we're going to open the suction bypass and we're going to equalize this compressor to whatever the suction pressure is. That way we're not pumping out 140 pounds of discharge gas, right? We're trying to save ammonia here. So we open the suction bypass valve and we equalize the separator to suction, right? So if you got 30 pound suction, you're opening up that bypass valve till you get 30 pounds of suction. Then you close that suction bypass valve and tag that out too, okay? So now you're isolated, equalize the suction pressure and you got a warm separator, okay? Piece of cake to pump out. Okay, so then you're going to hook up, you know, your hose to the separator, whether you're blowing it down into a bucket, which sucks because that water gets so hot so quick. So you're always changing water and you may not have a place to dump that water. You may have to walk a while or whatever. It's always good practice to get a 50-gallon barrel, fill it up with water and put some white vinegar in there that neutralizes the ammonia smell or, you know, whatever tricks you guys use. I've always heard white vinegar is pretty good for neutralizing the smell. It nothing really works the best. It all sucks because ammonia stinks so bad, you know? So a 50-gallon drum or a big old tote, you know, that some facilities have, just like a little pump out barrel with hot NH3 water, you know, pump it down. You know, you pump that pressure down to 0 or 1 pound till you're barely getting any bubbles in the water. And then, you know, like barely. But make sure that you're not sucking no water back in, okay? Have a journeyman show you the proper way, dude, because, you know, you could pump out a compressor, a package, and walk away. And once that ammonia is done pumping out, it creates a vacuum that's going to suck this water back in. Okay. I'm not going to get into the specifics of that, but, it happens. That's how it happens. When ammonia goes through a hose, when it's done going through and it's completely evaporated or whatever, it just like, I think it just releases oxygen or whatever. So it creates like a vacuum and, it'll suck that water back in and you'll fill a separator up with whatever amount you are have it the hose drained into. If you have 300 gallons, guess where that 300 gallons is going to go? It's going to siphon back in until all, you know, until it fills up. And that's a disaster, folks. Okay. Straight up disaster. You don't ever want to do that. Okay. That's the biggest clown move you can do because you never walk away from a compressor that's, you know, you're relieving pressure from into a bucket or anything. Never walk away. Okay, because that hose could come out and you could just be blasting ammonia out in the engine room and you'd be out there in your phone texting your old lady about what you want for dinner or something. You know, I've seen it all. Okay, stay right there. If you're walking away, close that valve and finish pumping it out when you get back from whatever you got to do. Even if you got to grab something, dude, you're creating a dangerous situation. Okay, so keep your eyes on it. Okay, so you're going to pump that thing down until it's equalized. Okay, and then whatever way you're going to pull a vacuum on it, whether it be a vacuum pump or you know, if you continue to let your siphon tea run to about like 15 inches or whatever. I usually go about 15 inches. I don't like pulling too hard on the seal because you'll take a good seal and then you'll pull 30 inches on a package, dude. And, oh man, it sucks. You know, so on the initial pump down, I don't go that low, you know? So I'll just go like 15 inches and then I'll turn it off and I'll sit there and watch it for like a couple minutes, you know? And if no, well, you got to go off your SOP. But I'm just saying standardized. So you got to watch that pressure. Is that pressure going to rise? You know, if it is, how much? You know, if it's going to rise 1 or 2 pounds, watch it. It's cool, dude. It's most likely residual of your separator. If you're jumping up 5 pounds, 6 pounds, 7 pounds, or it, you start timing it. If you're going up a point of a pound every 10, 15 seconds, guess what, guy? You got a leak. Okay. Or you're not isolated correctly. So cinch on all your valves. Ensure that you are isolated before you, you know, equalize from a vacuum. You know, it's very easy to pull a vacuum and just watch it. Okay. And that extra couple minutes of you watching it is going to pay off big time in your confidence, in your safety, and shit, even the smell. You know, the more vacuum you pull, the better. But typically, I'll watch it for a few minutes. If it doesn't rise, you know, I've got experience. So, I know the characteristics, but you guys, you know, set a good time limit or see how long. Some facilities may require you to let it sit in a vacuum for a half hour, hour before you even try to equalize it to ensure, you know, and then there's a form that you got to fill out, you know, the whole time you're waiting. So just be prepared for that kind of stuff, you know. Sorry if you guys hear these pages flipping around. I don't have baby blue anymore, dude. I got big papers, dude. I got to get a big blue notebook so I could get big blue. Okay, where am I at? I got pages 4, 5. Oh, here we go, here we go. God, I sound like a wreck right now, huh? Okay, so while you are pulling this vacuum, you're kind of just paying attention to it. It's going to take, you know, a minute to kind of get into a vacuum. You know, I didn't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, you know, but while, since I discussed that, while you're pulling this vacuum, and don't stand around and just stare at it, you know, be right there, but be proactive. Okay. And this is what I want you to do. Okay. Start calibrating your temp probes. Okay. You're waiting for this thing to pump down, go walk around, pull all your temp probes out of the wells, you know, and then go around and get like a cup, like an insulated cup. I'd make a sick one out of a out of a NH3 calibration bottle. You know, the calibration gas. You know, I sawed one in half after it was empty and I put insulation around it. It's like stainless steel, drilled some holes with some hangers on it. That's my calibration cup, dude. It's sick. I should sell them. You know, I need to post my calibration cup. It's so dorky looking, but oh my gosh, I've had it for like 8 years. I made it and I've never had to improve on it, dude. I nailed it on the first prototype. I should have done mass produce these. Okay. Cause it's sick. You know what? I'm going to make a post with my calibration cup. I have little holes drilled for my probe that I put in there so I could tell that it's 32 or 33 degree water. As I'm calibrating it, you know, I'm just all set up like a stud, dude. You know what I mean? I'm just it, bro. Anyways. Yeah. So calibrate your temp probes while you're waiting for it to pump down. Okay. Once it's evacuated in a vacuum, watch for pressure rise, equalize, blah, blah, blah. I'm just going over my notes. Once equalized, you can calibrate pressure transducer to zero. Yes. So once you're satisfied that you're isolated and all that, right, you're going to pull off your vacuum apparatus. And you're going to equalize this package. You're going to open up the service valve and hear all that air sucking in. You know, for a good minute or so, a couple. And, you know, and, you know, if you're not hearing a lot of air suck in there, you should. Because you should be in a deep vacuum if you're even equalizing it, right? Like 15 inches at least, right? So it'll suck air all the way in there until it equalizes with atmosphere. Okay. And then once that happens, you're kind of watching your panel and stuff. You're at 0 pounds. Now you let it sit there with it open and just chill, dude, and continue to kind of just do your little dilly dally. But this is a critical part, you know? So be aware of this. You know, you could be wiping down a part of the compressor. You know, you got to wipe down this whole package by the end of this inspection. So do a little bit at a time, wipe a little bit at a time, check it out. But you're letting this sit, right? And you're going to walk up to the port, right, where you got your fitting, and you're going to check after it's been equalized for a couple minutes and see, do you got pressure blowing out? Do you got, is this stinking really bad? You know, you're going to get some odor from the residual oil and stuff, but you know, ask someone, you know, is this safe? Most likely it will be, but you never know. It could not be, you know, especially with liquid injection and stuff. There's a lot of valves that could just like leak by, you know? So just ensure, do whatever you can. Please follow the rules. Okay. Yeah. So once you're equalized to atmosphere, 0 pounds, what I like to do is go to my pressure, my oil, and my suction pressure, my oil pressure, and my discharge pressure. And I like to see what they're at. I mean, is one reading 0.3 and the other one's reading 1.5? You know, blah, blah, blah. Are they different? Because the whole package is at 0 pounds, roughly. You know what I mean? So I'll bring them all to within a pound of each other because I know that, you know, that the package is equalized, right? So that's an easy way to calibrate it at 0 pounds. And if you have a PV350, you could check the calibration while it's running, which I'll do as well. But this is just the quick and easy way of calibrating at 0 pounds. I feel it's sufficient, you know? I don't know what everyone else thinks. It's nice to calibrate them when they're up at pressure. And I will do that if it's acting funky. But unless it gives me a reason to, I'll just calibrate it at 0 pounds. Sorry if that's a no-no. But I've been taught that way. Same thing with the temp probes. I've been, you know, I've seen people just shoot them with guns on the well. And if they're in within a couple degrees, they just roll with it. Or, you know, I like to pull them out and put the temp probe in water. That 33, 32 degree water for, you know, a minute or so and let it settle and just see that on the panel, 33, 32 degrees. If I read 35 and my water is 32, guess what I'm doing? I'm changing the offset -3 degrees. If you don't know how, read the book. Okay. Find a PDF file right away, dude, if you're a rook. Okay. Get a PDF file on that panel. Okay, because you're going to struggle with finding your way through a panel in the beginning. This sucks, dude, till you figure it out. I'm a wizard, dude. I look like a hacker going through a panel now. It's dope, dude, once you learn, dude, because you're in control, dude. When you have to look for settings and this and that, dude, oh, it's so frustrating. But bear with yourself. Do the research. Read the book. You'll find out the panels, the sub menus, the menus, the where to find everything, you know. Read the book. A quantum HD panel has a book online. Download that book and read the whole thing if you have quantum HD panels or whatever panel you have. If you have Omni panels, download the book. Okay. Okay. So once you calibrate your pressure transducers to 0 pounds, you're equalized, you're cool, you've done a lot of stuff on your checklist. Now it's time to be a rancher. Okay. You're going to go around. And before you start, you're going to check your oil heater. You're going to check your amps on that, you know, because the compressor's off and stuff. If the oil's not cold enough for the oil heater to come on, go ahead and pull out the oil separator temp probe, which you already have pulled out, and put your put that probe in the water. Okay, maybe not a 32 degree water or whatever. I don't know. Just as long as it gets below the set point for the oil heater to kick on. And then you want to see that kick on and you want to pull amps on that oil heater. Okay, I forget the amps, dude. 7 amps? I don't know. Is that a lot? That seems like a lot. I think it's around 7 amps. I don't know. Maybe 3. But do an amp draw and see what's up. You know, it should be pulling amps. Usually if it's pulling a couple amps, it's good. You know? You know, look at your oil level with it off. You know, where you at with it off? Is there 2 sight glasses? Is it in the second sight glass with it off? It should be, you know, at least a little bit. So at this time, you're going to isolate your oil filter housing. Okay. You're going to change your oil filter. Okay. You're going to replace the oil filter, gaskets, everything, clean out the oil housing. Oil filter housing, excuse me, and, you know, get all the gunk, whatever that might be in there. Okay. So you're going to do that. And then you're going to put the cap back on. We are going to complete as we go. This is like This is just something I say all the time to younger guys. I go complete as you go, complete as you go. Because, and what that means is don't bounce around. Don't put on the cover and two bolts or just snug up the bolts and think you're going to come back. Okay. After doing like three other things, that's not the right way to do things. That's how mistakes are made. We complete the job as you go. That's what I mean. So if you're changing the oil filter, you're not off that oil filter till that oil filter is changed. The gasket's on, that housing, that cover is on, and you've tightened the bolts and torqued them. Okay. To torque specifications, whatever it may be. Okay. That is when you can move on. Okay, to the next task. Do not leave a bunch of half-done jobs around. You will get hurt. Okay? You will blast oil. You will blast ammonia. Something's gonna happen. You know? Straight up. So, be thorough. Okay? Complete as you go. Tattoo that on your forehead. Okay. Next thing you're going to do, you're going to get a ladder, or if you don't need it, you're lucky. If you do, most likely, you're going to check and clean the suction strainer on the suction, valve. Okay. Now just make sure that it's all safe. Sometimes if there's a big drop leg, you'll get some saturated oil in a suction strainer. Okay. I've seen this happen. And especially if the strainer is like a cone style on like, I don't know what kind of package that is. Anyways, it's like a cone style, and they'll collapse, you know, over time, you know, if they're just degraded or if there's oil in the system and stuff, they get heavy and there's a lot of gas velocity and they'll just like kind of collapse, you know? And I've noticed that like saturated oil will be sitting there, you know, sometimes. So when you're popping that oil, that suction, strainer cover, be aware, you know, be aware. You'll get a nice little surprise sometimes. Bah! little splatter of oil on your skin, sizzle it away. You're like, ah, no, I'm melting. It's funny. So anyways, you're gonna pull out that strainer. You're gonna check the strainer, the integrity of it. You're gonna clean it with, you know, whatever you clean it with. I'm not recommending anything. Okay. Whatever your company uses to clean your strainers. Okay. Brake cleaner, I've heard people use whatever. Brake cleaner does work for the most part, but some people say no. I don't know. Let me know what you guys use to clean strainers. Okay. So you're going to inspect it. If it's all good, put it back, put the new gasket on. Everything I'm telling you to check comes with gaskets. Okay. There's a whole annual inspection kit for any compressor. You need to ensure that you order the gaskets or you have the Nylock, I think it's called, or whatever they call that stuff, to where you could cut your own gasket. Okay. And you should have a gasket cutter if you're a real service tech. If you don't know how to cut your own gaskets, dude, I don't know what you do. You know what I mean? Yeah, whatever. You ain't legit. Okay. Learn how to cut gaskets. Buy a gasket cutter. If your company doesn't supply one, buy one. It's worth the investment. Buy some gasket material. You're a stud once you have that, because you can fix problems right away. Do you not be like, oh, I got to order a gasket. It's like, what? What are you talking about? You make one. Jeez. Okay. Where am I at? Okay. So you're going to, the suction strainer, you're going to put that back. You're going to put the gasket on. You're going to torque your bolts, torque everything, gentlemen. You know, you could be sloppy putting it on, you know what I mean? With your impact or whatever, but torque in your star pattern to manufactured recommendations. Okay. Specifications, whatever. If you're the type of guy that goes, likes to go a little heavy on the torque, like me, I go a little 5-10 pounds over sometimes, whatever, dude. I feel safer that way. Sometimes the torque spec, dude, just feels squishy. You know what I mean? Like, dude, why could I get so much more out of it when I torqued it? I hate that feeling. I second guess the torque. I'm a torque guesser, whatever that means. Okay, so after that, you're going to go and you're going to check your oil return strainers, okay? Coming off the coalescer side. You're going to pull that apart. You're going to inspect it, make sure it's good quality, all that good stuff. Okay, you're going to return that. If you got like a little damp faucet block valve or something, you're going to rebuild that valve too with the O-rings and the little plastic gaskets and all that good stuff. I don't have one to show you. Anyway, so oil return strainers. If you have an oil pump, okay, this is the time where you're going to check your oil pump strainer as well. Do not skip this part, gentlemen. You guys like to cut corners. This is not a corner to cut. I'm going to throw this out there. Do not cut the oil pump strainer as a corner to cut. Okay? If anything, do the oil return strainer. Okay? But don't do the oil pump strainer. Okay? Don't not do that, I guess. I don't know. Don't skip it. Like, if you're burnt for time and you feel like you need to skip something, don't ever let it be the pump strainer, okay? Because that's the number one thing that'll get you a call back, is that it's barely going to be, it probably barely has like a pinhole that's letting any oil in. Then you leave and you didn't check it, and then that little pinhole gets plugged, and then they're like, oh, our oil pump's not working. You show up, you just did an annual, they pull the strainer, it's completely clogged. You checked on the paperwork that you checked that oil pump strainer, and now you're a liar. Okay, let that resonate. When you get caught pencil whipping, dude, talk about embarrassing. Okay, try to explain that. Oh man, it must have got dirty since yesterday. Nah, guy. Nah, we looked at the wrench marks and everything. You can tell when something's been manipulated, and this hasn't. You just got caught. Hey, whatever. Maybe that customer don't want you there at the facility anymore because you're a liar. And then your company just fired you. All just because you were lazy. Check everything on the list that I'm discussing. Okay. This is being thorough. Okay. There are places where you could cut time and do all that stuff. Figure it out where it is. That's not it. Okay. So after the oil pump strainer, you're going to check alignment on this oil pump if you have one. Okay. I have a little metal ruler I chopped up real small to fit in there. I usually just straight edge an oil pump. At first glance on an annual inspection, if I put a straight edge on it with the metal ruler across both hubs and the coupling, and I know what to look for, you know what I mean? Or what's tolerable, and it looks pretty good, I'm going to move on. Okay. I'll wiggle the coupling back and forth to see if there's in play or anything like that, but I'm not getting too technical. That's a lot of time wasted when you got 8 hours. Okay. Especially if it's got like a Woods coupling on this little oil pump, you know, flexible coupling. Okay. Just give it a good once over, you know? If you put that straight edge and you see a gap in between the hubs, take some time, put your dials on it, align it, shim that thing. But you're basically just checking it. You should ride up to align the motor pump because that could take 3-4 hours, depending on how good you are with dials. You know, you could start tweaking away on this thing and trying to shim it to 1,000ths and just take you a minute, dude. I've seen alignments take 8 hours, dude, if you're really fighting stuff, okay? So don't try to align nothing on annual inspection. You're just checking. Okay. If you check and it's way off, try to correct it the best you can and see how you do, you know, just with the straight edge, you know, just make it a little bit better and then ride up to get that aligned, you know, because you're going to blow the seal in the oil pump and just have a nasty oil leak, you know, and then maybe no one's around and maybe it'll leak out all the oil and then ammonia comes. Okay. So, yeah, there's that. Checking the in-play. Okay, after that, I'm out of sequence with this, but I'll just talk about it. So at this time, you want to take off the coupling, or the coupling guard to the compressor and motor, whatever, and you want to inspect that at this time. You're looking around at it. You're checking the bolts. Put a wrench on the Allen wrench on the bolts or whatever bolt it is. Check. Make sure you got nothing loose. You don't got to crank on nothing. Just check for tightness. You know, you don't want to mess up the torque, right? So you're looking at the coupling. You're looking at all this stuff. Now is the time to check in play on your compressor shaft, okay? And what I typically do, I have a magnet with the stand with a dial indicator on it. And I put it at the end of the hub, and I'll get a pry bar with it. Off with no pressure. I've heard some people say you want to check in play with pressure, without pressure. I think you're going to get relatively the same kind of push either way. I don't know, but I just do it whenever I can. And while it's pumped down and locked out, it always seems to be the best way for me. You know, if I get 5,000ths on an in play, whether there's pressure on it or not, there's 5,000ths, guy. That's a lot. You know, so you want to see 1 to 2, but it's all up to the compressor, dude. There's some recips that have 25,000ths of in play, 40,000ths of in play. On newer Micoms, it'll blow your mind the in play on these things, like the WHBs. Anyways, that's a whole different one. I'm a reciprocating compressor stud, by the way. If you had to specialize anything about me, that's it. I'm a stud when it comes to reciprocating compressors. Even though we're talking about screw compressors today, I've been taught by some master mechanics, senseis. Dude, I can't wait to bust out their names on here, dude. Yeah, it's a good story all in itself, dude. I'll save it. Okay, so you're going to check the alignment when it's hot. You know, some people, they'll do the alignment right when they test the first safety shutdown. They lock it out and the separator's hot, right? And you want the motor and the compressor hot at this time. And you're going to check your alignment with your dials. Or if you have a laser on hand, lucky you. You roll around with the $20,000 alignment laser. That's awesome. You're going to check the alignment, you know, while it's hot. You're going to check the hot alignment. And if it's within a couple thousandths, three thousandths, leave it. You know, it's all good. If you're out five thousandths or more, go ahead and write it up to come back for an alignment, okay? Because you're going to lose a shaft sail. Or it's just good maintenance to be within three thousandths or better, okay? We shoot for zero when it comes to alignments, folks, if you didn't know that. Soft foot, alignment, vertical, horizontal, whatever. Shoot for zero, homies. Okay, we strive for perfection. I can't even say it right. We strive for perfection, and we'll settle for a little bit less than, okay, but not much. Okay, but always go for zero. Okay, during this time, what are you going to check next? Okay, so you check the alignment of the compressor. If it's off, write it up, you know, to come back, or if, you know, whatever, dude. You check the in play, make sure you know what the tolerance is, or even if you don't know the tolerance, just document it, okay? And then someone will see it down the road and be like, whoa, you know, whatever. Or they could refer to it. Okay, next, you're going to go to the liquid injection strainer, okay? Now, depending on what type of valve it is, if it's like an ICAD valve on your liquid injection, I want you to go ahead and disconnect the power to that ICAD valve and reconnect it so it goes through self-calibrating mode and you can watch it, you know, go from whatever it is to zero, and then just ensure that it calibrates itself and you got movement, okay? You don't spend too much time on that. That's usually pretty good. You got to check the liquid injection strainer. Don't bypass this either, because you'll start, if you skip this, they get logged with oil sometimes and gunk. If it's a dirty system, then your compressor is going to start overheating right after you do an annual. Folks, this happens the day after you always do an annual. You get these stupid calls, you, where strainers go bad if you don't check them. Okay, don't bypass this. Don't shortcut that. Strainers are important, folks. You may think they're okay, but they're okay until they're not, dude. Just check them, change them, clean them. Okay. Okay. Next, you're going to go to the starter or the VFD while it's off, and you're going to do a visual inspection in the cabinet, dude. You're going to look at your contacts. You're going to look at your fuses. You're going to look at your wiring, dude. You got crack wiring. You got signs of moisture getting in there. You got, I don't know, spider webs everywhere. You got dead rat in there. What do you got in there? You know, how's it look? Does it look normal? Does it look not normal? Okay, if it's not normal, bring it to someone's attention, write it up that an electrician needs to come and diagnose it further, especially if you're an apprentice. Don't start sticking your hands in a 480 panel, a starter panel, okay? You will die, okay? Follow all arc flash, whatever, dude. You know what I mean? What page is that? 2, 3. Okay. Da, da, da. Okay, so I think that's it for like all the strainers and stuff like that. So once you're completed with all that, that's all your wrenching that you're going to do. You've changed all gaskets. You've checked all strainers. You did all the stuff you need to do with this compressor off and locked out safely, right? So now what you're going to do, you're going to pull a vacuum. Okay. And always use a vacuum pump to pull a vacuum. Don't ever use a siphon tea to pull a vacuum on a compressor. Okay. You will suck water back in one day. I'm not saying that it happens every time, but it will happen. Okay, so you're going to pull a vacuum. This is when you want to go a little bit deeper, okay? 20 inches is more acceptable. It depends on the seal, dude, and the situation and all this. God, to go 30 inches sucks, you know, on a compressor package, because you're sucking on that seal and you're pulling the oil away from it and everything. I don't like to do it. You know, I usually go 15 to 20. If they have an auto purger, it's awesome. If they don't, then I still go 15 to 20. And then I let them know that, hey, I'm saving you money on a seal for a couple hours worth of me manually purging at your condenser. Okay. It's very cost effective. And I let them know. I go, hey, I could pull 30 inches or I could pull 20, okay, and then purge a little bit of air, you know, once it collects, you know, because it's not going to be much, you know, it's not going to be much air, but it, you know, you save money with the seal and stuff, because I've ruined seals by pulling a deep vacuum before. You know, everyone says you suck the O-ring. I don't know what actually happens to that seal. I don't get you dried out when you do that sometimes. Okay, so you're going to pull your vacuum and you're going to let it sit. Once again, make sure that you're not rising in pressure from that vacuum, because at this point, if you do rise from vacuum, it's going to happen pretty steadily because you have a leak. Okay, you're just sucked out all the air, and if your vacuum's at 15 inches, it starts going 14, 9, 5, 3, 13, 9. Boom, you got a leak, bud. Don't you dare crank pressure, okay? So what you do is you hook up your vacuum pump again, okay, and you pull that pressure, give whatever air is sucking in out, and during that time, go ahead and run that oil pump if you can. Okay, then that will lubricate your shaft seal and lubricate all your everything, you know, and most likely it'll seal up and you'll get that vacuum to hold. Okay, so once that vacuum holds for a little bit and you're comfortable, everything's good, you ain't got no leaks, you're going to go ahead and crack that suction bypass valve again, the small one, okay? Now, you're going to crack that. If it's got a check valve on it, just go ahead and crack your isolation valve. Okay, most of them have a check valve on suction isolation valve to keep that 40-pound differential on startup, okay? I'm just kicking a little knowledge on you so you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so you're going to crack that suction valve to about 5 pounds. It's nice to have someone at the panel when you do that, but if you're by yourself, you know, just open it, count to 1,000, 2,000, I guess, and shut it, you know, and then go look at your panel. If you got 3 pounds, 4 pounds, 5 pounds, try to stay under 5 pounds if you can, under 10. Do your best. You know, a quick open and shut. Things happen quick. I get it. So now you got 5 pounds on the package. Okay. Now you want to, pull out your sulfur sticks, right? Or soap bubbles if it's Freon, you know, Freon. And you want to leak check this whole package, dude, everything that you touched, go around every bolt. If you have to feel comfortable at 5 pounds. Okay. A lot of people say you got a leak of 5 pounds. You got a leak of 50 pounds. Okay, so if your leak's going to show up, a lot of times it's going to show up now. Okay, that doesn't always hold true. I've had things leak at 75 pounds that didn't leak at 50 pounds. It sucks. It's so scary. Anyways, yeah, you're going to walk this whole package. And Ricky E, okay, it's your time to shine, son. Bah. You, Ricky E right here in the Central Valley is a technician with 11 years experience. I know he has 1 year more year than me because we've been following each other around in this industry for a decade already. He's younger than me and all this stuff. And he hit me up with a video, dude, of him with, I think it was 2 or 3 sulfur sticks twisted up like a twisted pretzel, like it was braided like girl's hair. You know, it was twisted. Okay. 3 of them twisted together tight and he lit it. Right. And he sent me this video. Right. And there was this big old fan blowing and he lit it and he put it in the fan that was blowing directly on this sulfur stick on fire and pulled it back out. And it was still lit, folks. He performed the black magic, dude. Because last episode I was talking about doing Dracula stuff, you know, and lighting your sulfur stick underneath the coat on the roof. This dude twists up sulfur sticks and lights them. I know he didn't think about this. Someone told him, dude, but he's trying to claim it like it's his. Ricky, dude, I know you didn't come up with that, boy. Thanks for sharing it, though. You know, it's your black magic. I told you I would mention that, dude, and there you go, dude. It's a helpful trick, guys, dude. In all seriousness, dude, this was very helpful, dude. I appreciate Ricky E from the Central Valley of California for kicking that knowledge out for all of us, dude. If you knew that trick, dude, I'm sure you've probably been to prison, dude. It looked like a prison trick or something. Clowning. I crack myself up sometimes. So, once you've gone around with your little prison trick with the sulfur sticks and stuff, and you're satisfied that there's no leaks on anything you've touched, okay, then, you know, make sure to look around, too, that sulfur stick isn't kicking off a leak anywhere else, because you're going to get blamed for that, too, because you're there. That's just how it goes. Okay, so once you are satisfied that there's no leaks whatsoever, dude, and go ahead and go back to that suction valve and open it up some more, and then bring it up to like 15 pounds and then leak check again. And then bring it up to 25 pounds and check it again. Go slow, okay? You guys are rookies. You're inexperienced. Feel safe, dude. Go in increments of 5 pounds. If that makes you feel safe, take your time. Excuse me. This is when things are going to happen, okay? This is when you'll get tested, okay? When you get a leak at 5 pounds and you never had one before by yourself, okay? Are you going to have your service wrench right there? Are you going to have your crescent wrench? Do you have tools handy to mitigate the situation? You know, are you ready to shut that suction valve in? And you still have your hoses set up, by the way, on the separator with the service valve closed. Okay. So if you do have a leak, you're going to shut that suction valve immediately, run over to your service valve with your hose still attached, still by the bucket of water or barrel of water or whatever. And then you're going to bleed out that pressure immediately. Okay. While you pinpoint exactly where that leak is. Okay. So that's how you handle the situation. Okay. That's why we go 5 pound increments. Okay. Especially if you're new. Okay. You want the leak to show itself at 1 pound, not 50. Okay. So that's why you barely crack that suction valve and then shut it. Okay. Because a big leak will show itself immediately. Okay, guys, please be safe. Have your safety gear, have your mask ready. Okay. Let someone know that you're going to pressurize the package after you've gone through the whole thing. Okay. Because let someone know that, be safe. Okay. A lot of time there's a buddy system at some places, you know, just follow the standard operating procedures and all safety rules. Okay. I can't stress this enough. Okay. Be safe, folks. Okay. So, now that you open the suction pressure, all the way, you're equalized. Maybe you got 30 pounds suction pressure. Boom. You got 30 pounds on the system. No leaks, no nothing. Okay. You're good. Okay, so now you're going to put your liquid injection solenoid valve in auto. You're going to make sure any other valves are in auto. Okay, then you're going to open up all isolation valves to this package and get this ready to run. Backseat all valves. You know, make sure all your temp probes are in the wells and screwed in. All your pressure transducers on the dim plugs or the wire nut, whatever. Just ensure all your connections are good. Make sure you have no faulty readings on your panel. You don't have no cutouts. Nothing looks weird. Okay. Okay. And if nothing looks weird and you have this thing sitting there for a couple minutes with everything open and all this, walk around, look for oil leaks, look at the covers for anything you touched. You know, is there any type of oil leak? What kind of oil leak? You got one drip, two drips? Is that just residual from you messing with it? Or do you have a slow leak? Monitor. Okay. This warrants investigation. You know, I like to put little pig mats wherever I work. That way, when I'm done with the work, you know, I wipe it up and I move it. That way, if there's a leak, I'll see a fresh drip on the ground, or I'll put a fresh mat there to where you can see like a drop. Okay. You need to investigate this stuff. You don't want to leave like a slow leaker, dude, because it turns into a mess, dude. And then you got to come clean it and fix it and all that good stuff. It's not good practice, dude. So you're comfortable. Everything's open. Everything's good. You're ready to rock. Okay. So what you're going to do, you're going to start this compressor in manual mode. Okay. You're going to start this compressor and you're going to watch it ramp up. You know, you're in manual slide valve, you know, auto on the VI. If it has VI, you know, let the panel always control that. Okay. You don't mess with VI, only on calibration, which I'll talk about a little bit. So you're going to start it and monitor for normal operation. Okay. You're going to watch it come up to temps. You're going to watch the liquid injection solenoid kick on. You're going to watch that TXV, or if it's ICAD valve or whatever on the liquid injection, you're going to watch that work. You know what I mean? You're going to check it. You got your little temp gun out now. You're walking around it. You're shooting temps on everything. You're looking at the panel. You're shooting temps. You're kind of correlating everything. You're looking at pressures. You're listening. Everything, dude. You need to realize that you touched just about everything there is to touch on this compressor. Okay. You're looking for your own mess ups at this point in time. Okay, this is a critical stage. So it's just running, blah, 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 blah. And you're good, dude, because you're a stud, right? And you did everything right. and everything's good. Okay, so good for you. Do the compressor's running. So now typically what I'll do is if you get sent out with the vibration analysis machine, some places do that. I've been with companies that do that. I've been with companies that have their own vibration analysis specialists, dude, that go around and does it. I've been the vibration analysis specialist every time I have it. You know, it's basically just going around and taking readings. But you need to know where the readings need to be taken. And a good vibration analysis guy will mark it at every point. That way he knows he's taking the reading at the same exact point in the same exact spot every single time for historical data, dude. You know, it's so smart to do. A lot of compressors will have little tags. It'd be like vibration point here. It's definitely in the literature of where to do it, but it's so nice to get a yellow paint pen, white paint pen, those little placards. Keep track of where you're taking these vibration analysis readings, because if you take them in different spots, you're going to get different readings. Plain and simple. You're messing up the experiment, folks. We're trying to be scientists here, and you're blowing it. You know, it's all vibration analysis will pinpoint something right away, but the main goal of it is long term. You know, I mean, it's just like trending data, I guess is the term. You know, I want to be able to look at last year and the year before and the year before and see a bearing kind of creating more and more vibration. You know, that way we know when it's getting to the point, the threshold point, I guess, or whatever, or it's approaching that, hey, time for a rebuild. Okay, so that's why we do that. It's very important. Vibration analysis isn't just like whip it out just to get the data in there and send it in, dude, and it's just like whatever to the next one. This is very critical information, and it's very critical that you do it right. Or else it's all null and void, dude. No one wants a couple bunk years of some kid that did a vibration analysis on the data trending to where it's like you can't even count that year. You know, then you go do it the next year and you're like, well, what's different? You don't know. Okay. So if you're tasked with doing that, now's the time to do it. Okay. Another thing that's good to do at this point in time is an oil sample for oil analysis. Okay. Because you've changed the filter. You've let it run. You've let it come up to temp. I don't know if some people like to do the oil analysis before they change the filter. That way they could see the state of the oil before you change the filter. But I don't know. I've done it before, done it after. I guess it's whenever I remember. I guess it makes more sense to do it after. I don't know. It makes sense to do it before. That way you can see the state before you change the filter. But sometimes when you do oil analysis, they'll tell you, hey, change the filter. So I'm going to go ahead and say you want to change the filter and then take the oil analysis after. And typically you want to take an oil analysis coming from the oil after the filter going into the compressor, because that's going to let you know the state of the oil going into the compressor. Okay. That's important information. Okay, if you got a lot of sediment problems or, I don't know, bearing wear problems or whatever, I wish they let you, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I know that if you take the sample before the filter, you're looking to see what the state of the oil is coming from the separator, okay? If you take it after the filter, you're looking to see the state of the oil going into the compressor from the filter, okay? And you always take your oil samples at temp, okay, at temp and running. Okay. The compressor needs to be running. Take a valid oil sample for oil sample analysis, folks. Okay. I don't know who's told anyone what. If you're taking oil samples with it off, dude, it's not working. You're going to get bad readings every time. And here's another helpful tip. Okay. For my brothers out there, flush your oil samples. Okay. When you go up to a compressor or this compressor we're working on, even though you've changed the filter and everything, you clean the housing and all that good stuff, that's cool. But still, when you get like a 5-gallon bucket, and before you take an oil sample, you start filling up your oil sample bottle, go ahead and run that oil into a bucket, you know, at least a gallon, dude. I've heard some people say a lot more, but I've heard some people say not at all. But a half gallon to a gallon would be a good flush of your little service valve and to get whatever little particles that might be kind of just trapped in there that aren't a part of the whole equation. Maybe they were part of the last equation. I don't know. So that's how you do it. And then when you take an oil sample for oil analysis, you know, you want to be very careful, barely crack that valve, and you know, you fill it up, it's going to foam up. Some people use a big container and fill it up quicker and let the foam settle and then pour it into the sample bottle. Some people pour it directly in the sample bottle, tap it around to get that foam out, and then add a little bit more. It sucks, dude. It takes a long time to get an oil sample if you just pour it right in that little bottle, you know, because it foams up so much and the bottle's not that big. So it'll foam up all the way. You'll tap it around for like a minute and then you'll get like 2 drops of real oil, dude. And I've seen little apprentices do this. It's so long, dude. It just cracks me up. I like taking videos of them doing it, you know, tapping their little bottle, dude. They'll take an hour to get an oil sample. I'm like, what are you doing, guy? You got 12 of these to do. You don't have 12 hours. Oh God. Okay, so you're going to do your oil sample, okay? After that, the compressor's running and all this stuff, you're going to test your safety cutouts, okay? You're going to test your, if I forget some, you know, whatever. You're going to test your low suction pressure, okay? You're going to test your discharge pressure, your high discharge pressure cutout, your high discharge temperature cutout. You're going to test your low separator oil temperature cutout. I'm not going to tell you guys how to test all these cutouts, dude. That's the part of the journey, okay? You need to come up with your own way to test these efficiently, and everyone's different. I'm not going to teach you all my tricks because then you'll be as studly as I am. You have to learn to be as studly as I am. No one can teach you. Okay, so get your field knowledge up, son. Where was I? The oil. Oil filter differential cutout, oil temperature cutout, oil pressure cutout. If it's got oil pressure on startup cutout, you're testing that. Oil pressure at run cutout, you're testing that. You're testing all the temperature cutouts. Whatever, dude. You got a list. I'm sorry if I missed some of them, dude, but all the cutouts. Look at your compressor panel and go to the set points or calibrations, and basically every temp probe has a cutout, or every reading does. So make sure you check them all, dude. You have to check them all, okay? And in between each cutout, okay, you're doing this at the end of the day because this is the easiest work. You know, you run in the compressor, you test the safety, boom, it shuts down. You're waiting the recycle delay. While you're doing the recycle delay, you're wiping down the rest of the compressor. You're filling out paperwork. You're gathering your tools. You're cleaning up. Boom. Oh, it's time to test another safety. Run it for a little bit. Do a little bit more stuff. Test another safety. Okay, mess around. Okay, learn things. I don't know. Stay busy. Clean up your stuff. Get in the process of working your way out of there as you're testing safeties, okay? Do 2 things at once. Be a multitasker, okay? You have to do this. You can't just stand around and test safeties and wait for the recycle delay while you're staring at the panel, dude. You're a clown if you do that, okay? You're a milker. Don't do that. Recycle delay time is busy time, okay? That means you're working for 20 minutes, dude, while you're waiting for that delay. Whatever it is that you need to do, go do it. Okay, so you tested all your safeties and they're all good. We're assuming that we didn't find no issues with this compressor because, man, I've been talking already for a long time. Anyways, okay, you tested your safety cutouts. Okay, now you're going to check the operation of your slide valve and calibrate the slide valve, okay? Now, a lot of the newer panels will have auto calibration, and that's awesome. Just do that. The older ones, they'll have it too, actually. Some of them, but the really old ones, you really got to know what's up. So, just to give you a brief overview, you're going to do your VI first. You're going to calibrate your VI from 0 to whatever, set your voltages or whatever, your minimum and maximum. It's like 0 to 5 volts on that. Yeah, on the VI, whatever. I don't know. I do know. I just don't look. Okay. I look at the reading. I just don't look at the book. That's what I meant. So typically your 100% or your VI, your high VI will be like at 5.0 volts on the panel and your low VI will be like at 0, whatever. So you're going to set that first. Okay. And then once that's calibrated, then you're going to move on to your slide valve calibration. And what you're going to do, you're going to unload this slide valve and make sure you're at zero. And to ensure you're at zero, you keep pushing that unload in manual slide valve unload all the way to zero, right? But you keep holding it. You let it keep going and you're watching the motor amps at this time. What's your minimum amps at this point? You know what I mean? Are you chilling like at 40 amps, 50 amps? Watch it while you're pushing unload. Is it still going lower? If it's dropping to 49, 48, 46, you let it go. Let it keep going. And then once it kind of buries out at like a bare minimum amps, push set minimum. That's your minimum slide valve. You know, it's easy to set it at zero, but it cannot be true zero, okay? Because if you're still pulling amps higher than just like the minimum, or if you could go down lower in amps, then you're not at the true zero, okay? So you set that, okay? Now you're going to go to 100%. So you push load, right? And you're watching the amps, you're watching everything, you're watching it, you're listening, everything. you rock it all the way up to 100% amp. Or 100% slide valve. And while you're watching the slide valve go up to 100%, you're watching the amps again. When you hit 100% and you're still holding the manual load, are those amps still going up? If that's the case, keep going up, okay, till that tops out for a good couple seconds and you don't get no amp rise. Then you press set maximum slide valve, okay? So that pretty much is going to give you a good calibration of your slide valve and VI. Okay, you go off of amps and you know, if there's more to it, I don't want to explain it. I wish I could show someone. Ask someone, read the book. It's all in the book, dude, I promise. Okay, where am I at now? Da, 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 da. Wipe down compressor pad. Oh, yeah. Okay, so now... you may not do this on this trip, but if you got like 6 or 7 compressors you need to do an annual inspection on, you have to test the high level safety once a year for these things to be compliant with like IIAR paperwork and all that good stuff, you know, good safe manufacturing practices, PSM, blah, 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 blah. Compliance, guys. So you're going to test the high-level safeties on the low side and the high side. If there's 2 vessels, you're going to test the high-level float on each one. Now, this is up to you and your company's policy and the on-site policies whether you're going to test this high-level safety float with actual liquid ammonia in the site column, or if you're going to be a dirtbag and climb up there with a ladder and just use a magnet to verify if the switch itself is operating. See, there's a float valve and a float switch, gentlemen, for the high level. The float valve is the actual float, the internals. The float switch is that plastic cylinder on top. There's 2 different things: float valve, float switch. Okay? When testing these, you could use a magnet to test the operation of the switch. Okay? That is the hokey pokey way to do it, to verify that the circuit is working. But that does not verify if the valve is working, folks. Okay? The only way to check this, and I know it sucks, dude, and it's the most dangerous job that we do. Okay? Let me repeat. This is probably the most dangerous job we do in service. Okay? I am going to go ahead and say that. It's when you pull... pump liquid, recirculated liquid from one vessel or the same vessel, and you pipe it in to a site column with your hoses, with the 3-way hooked up to your purge hose and all this stuff. I'm not getting too far into this because I don't want no apprentices getting no wild ideas. But you got a 3-way manifold or something like that. And what you're going to do is you're going to, at first, you're going to shut the top valve of the site column. And what that does is create a pressure on top of a pressure differential on top of the side column because the ammonia is evaporating in there or boiling off, right? So it's going to create pressure on top of the side column to push that liquid down the side column into the receiver. So you're going to watch that side column drop all the way down. And when you don't see anything in there, you're going to close that isolation valve on the bottom, okay? And you're going to check your, if it's a level probe, you're going to check your calibration on that and all that good stuff. Even though that's not part of your job, you're just going to check it out. So What am I doing here? How do you do that? Yes. Okay, so you pumped it all the way down. You know, you got very minimal liquid in there, whatever. It's isolated. So now you're going to go up to the top valve, open up that isolation valve now, okay? Because you're already in setup to pump some liquid into this column. So what you're going to do is you open up all your valves, your manifold, and you're ready to rock, dude. You best believe you have your apron, your mask, your face shield, your rubber gloves. You got your standby guy. You got sensors and tests. You got the crew ready to rock, bro, because this is when shit is going to go down, if it's going to go down heavy, bro. And when it does go down, you better be ready to rock, dude, or you're going to be dead. Okay, so realize the gravity of this situation, dude. I'm sorry if I'm so blunt. So you're going to pump recirculated liquid into this side column. And depending on the pressure of the liquid, it could be 50 pounds of pump liquid, dude, because you're operating in like a vacuum or something. I don't know. And boom, that liquid's going to go in there quick, dude. And you're watching that. Whoosh, and that liquid's going to go up super quick. You know, you don't want to go too quick because you could shoot liquid all the way up that side column and then it'll go through and then kind of get sucked in through the suction some way, somehow. I don't know. You be careful. But always slow with liquid, gentlemen and ladies. Always slow with liquid. Okay. Liquid will kill you. So will gas, but still liquid's more dangerous. I just don't want to get burned. You see those videos of people that get blasted with ammonia, dude? It scars them for life. Dude. People lose eyes. I know a couple of gentlemen that have lost eyes. Yeah. It happens, folks. Wear your PPE. So you're gonna pump liquid up there till that you watch that float switch engage. Tick. That means the float valve went up and the float switch engaged. That is the true way to test the high level safety, folks. And usually there's a time delay in there. If you do have a time delay, go ahead and lower that time delay to like 5 seconds. That way you're not sitting there for like 2 minutes, you know, with this pump liquid and stuff. Just lower the time delay, get it done with, get it over with, right? The minute it shuts down, you shut off all your valves, you know, and then you purge whatever's in your hoses. And then you return everything back to the way it was, reset your system, get it going, do the next one, okay? But what you're doing is when that high level hits, you better shut down. If it's a low side vessel, it better shut down all the low side compressors, okay? Shut down whatever else it's supposed to do, it will. Sometimes the low side will only do the low side, or sometimes the high side will do all sides or whatever. It doesn't matter. Make sure they shut off what they're supposed to shut off. Check your king valve. King valve should be shut off, or liquid feed valve should shut off during a high level and all this good stuff. So this is stuff you check annually for compressor protection. Okay, folks. Okay. And you need to check this because guys like me will come around and I'll check the alarm history. Okay. Of a compressor. And I'll look at the date and the times and all this stuff. And I'm just checking to see if someone's doing their due diligence. You know, the panel says it all, guys. I could find anything out. Okay. I could pull the memory. I could do anything, dude. So you're documented doing everything, dude. So make sure you cover your butt, dude. And don't skimp out the customer because it's skimping out on safety. And we don't do that. Okay. What's next? Okay. So after you test the high levels, dude, you're a stud. You're like, maybe that was the last compressor out of 6 compressor annual. You've been there a week, whatever. And you're like, boom. Yeah, dude, that's awesome. The high level safety work, there's no issues. This facility is like your account. So you're like, of course everything works because I'm a stud. You tell the customer, no issues, brother. Big Poppy's been handling it. So, at that point, you're going to clean up, you know, you make sure everything's in auto mode and everything's the way you left it. You hand it over to someone. Hand over the system to someone and let them acknowledge that they are now in control of the system before you get out of there, okay? So, boom, they're going to do that. You are, at this point in time, you're all happy because everything's good. Your tools are kind of clean up. Everything's on your cart because you've had time to do this, dude. You're ready to rock, okay? Everything's done. Everything's filled out because you were doing it during recycle delays in between cutouts in the afternoon, okay? So, do your work in the morning, cutouts in the afternoon. You lazy guys that do cutouts in the morning and the work in the afternoon, you're clowning because a safety could be, you could come back and do a safety, or the next guy could come and test that safety if you missed it. Okay. The next guy ain't going to come and finish your oil filter. Okay. You're there till that's done. So take care of those problems in the morning, test your safeties in the afternoon. Okay. This is so helpful, dude. Okay. Don't be the lazy guy that does the safeties in the morning. You're a scumbag if you do that. Okay. I don't care what anyone says. Okay, so then, you know, this needs to be discussed, dude, because this is going to be the number one reason why you're going to get busted, dude. Okay, clean up after yourself. Put all oil in proper containers. Wipe down the compressor screen. Wipe down the package. Calibrate your touchscreen if it's all sloppy or and it don't act right. Just do it anyways, right? Clean your screen. Clean the panel. Make it presentable. Make this compressor that you touched today, or if it's the last one, whatever one you touched that day, make that one the best looking one in the engine room. That way, when you leave and someone goes in there, they look at that compressor and it's shining compared to everything else. And they'll be like, dude, Justin, touch that one because it's shining, boy. Okay. So that's good practice as well. You know, you'll be a stud, dude, if you keep that mentality of just being, let my compressor be the best one in the engine room, dude. Okay. That's worth to live by right there. Our best looking one, at least. You know? Okay. Yeah. So you're going to want to dispose of or let them dispose of the NH3 water that you pumped out, your oil filters. You don't bring none of this stuff with you. They own this, dude, unless they've worked something out, dude. Okay. You're leaving oil filters on site, but you are putting them in the proper waste oil containers. Everyone has a waste oil area with containers and stuff. If you leave oil filters out in the engine room or whatever, shame on you, dude. You're going to get ripped by when the customer sends the email to your boss, dude, because that's sloppy. That's not good service, leaving a mess. You never leave a mess. Even if you come to a mess, you leave no mess. Okay, gentlemen and ladies? Okay, so after that, you know, all your pig mats that you used, all everything, dude, you cleaned up. You brought the customer around. You ensured that you're good with him. Okay, especially if you got a high maintenance customer that loves to cry about stuff. They're out there. Bring them around. Be like, is there anything else I could do for you, sir, before I you know, wrap this up for the day? He'll be like, nope, what do you got for me? So then you're going to break it down. You're going to show him your tablet or your inspection form and be like, listen, dude, this, that, and this. You know, last year I made a note about this. Looks like it's been changed this year. It was an issue this year. I noticed we're getting high on hours. You know, we're going to let you know the vibration analysis report. The oil analysis sample should be here in a week or two. You know, we're going to get you all informed on the status of this compressor for this year and see what other type of preventive maintenance actions need to be taken for this package, you know, going forward. You know, that way we're not left with a catastrophic failure, because that's why we're doing all this, folks. We don't want catastrophic failures. Okay. So do your job. So you presented it to your customer. I'm reading my notes, guys, if you're wondering what I'm reading. Have them sign off on your, oh yeah, this is good. Have them sign off on your permits right there when you got them. Okay, you have to sign off on these permits. You cannot leave open permits. There's triple copies everywhere, dude. And if this facility gets audited, they need the opening and closing of these permits, dude. This is all part about a proper PSM program, okay? And your on-site rules. So you best believe you need to be following this stuff, okay? So close out all any and all open permits. Return all key cards. Set alarms, do whatever you got to do to make this place exactly how you found it, if not better. Okay, last page here. Go to truck. Go to truck, complete paperwork for your company. Okay, this is where you're doing your own paperwork now, in the truck before you leave. Okay, don't plan on doing this when you get home because you'll forget, you're tired, and then you're going to wake up next morning trying to go to work and you got your coordinator or your dispatcher blowing you up because you didn't turn no paperwork in yesterday because you forgot and you're too tired. Do your business on the job site. That way, when you leave there for the day, you are done. Okay, business handled. We don't leave no business unattended to, okay? Or at least I don't, dude. I handle business, boy. Okay, so enter your time, submit service estimate and parts order with part number, serial number, model number, and pictures so they cannot mess this up, okay? If you have a recommended repair, say that the filter differential was 15 pounds today on that. Or maybe your slide valve was acting goofy and you want to change the directional valve. Or maybe you had a check valve that was acting funky, you want to change that. okay? Pictures, model number, serial number, model type, brand, color. I don't care. If you know the type of metal it's made out of, go ahead. Include that. More info, the better, right, folks? And then you would submit that to your dispatcher or your parts person, whoever does that. And they're going to contact the customer once they get pricing with the labor quote and pricing quote. And boom, bada, everyone's pockets are getting fatter, dude. You know what I mean? We're out here getting paid. You got your 8 hours. The company got paid. The customer did their compliance. They know the standing of their compressor. And here you are, a stud, a player in the game, dude. And you're winning. You're a service tech, dude. You're a one-year apprentice, and you just completed an annual inspection in 8 hours, okay? I didn't really tell you guys to check the power supplies of the panels and stuff, but you got to do that too. Check your electrical connections in there during recycle delay 20-minute times, you know? Take advantage of your recycle delay times, okay? If you got a 20-minute recycle delay and you want to take a lunch, then hit a safety. Go take your lunch for 30 minutes. At least 20 of those minutes will be recycle delay, you know? And you're only losing 10 minutes of production time. I break stuff down like this, brothers. I am so efficient. God, I'm a stud. But you guys know that, I'm sure, by now. Ha! And then I put final stage, bounce, dude, and go home. And make sure you sign out of the facility. Wowzers, dude. This might have been my longest one, dude. Maybe because I put 5 pages of notes together, dude, and some shout outs. So if you made it to the end of this podcast, I know it was a long one, dude, but I felt the need to kick out a good one and an informative one. Please reach out to me and give me some feedback, dude. I don't know how I'm doing unless you guys tell me. I could be over here saying that, you know, I'm the shit when you guys are just like, God, dude, you're so annoying. Anyways, be annoying to me, dude. Reach out to me, dude. I want friends. You know, I got friends, but I want more. You know, you guys down in Australia, haven't heard much from you since I shouted you out, dude. What up? What else? Yeah, dude, next episode, I'm going to reveal the company that I'm going to if everything goes good. And, you know, I'll probably have some big news of some big things coming with the podcast, dude. I haven't been kicking out podcasts, but I've been making plans. So, bigger and better things, dude, all the time. Stay tuned, brothers. Thanks for listening. You can reach me at nh3techtalk@gmail.com. Once again, this is Justin Little. Cool, dude. You guys are great. Talk to you soon. What? Bye.